scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left.
Off the glass, in left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Well, hello and happy Friday. It is Friday, May 3rd, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Book a free security audit and keep your assets as safe as your secret snack drawer. Book at CalgaryLockandSafe.com. Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com on this World Championship Travel Eve for Aaron Vickers. You're gone to Europe on Saturday morning for the 2024 Men's World Championships in Prague and Ostrava. So it's our last day with Vickers in studio for a while.
And I've got more company coming.
Well, that's right. We found out on Friday morning that Andrew Mangiapane of the Flames will be representing Team Canada for a second time, which means two Flames will be at the World Championship along with Martin Pospisil, who's going for Slovakia. We'll touch on all that a little bit later on in the program. Happy Friday, buddy.
Happy Friday to you, too.
Let's go inside hockey. Want to start this hour with some fun and put a smile on your face talking some Flames hockey. It's inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. It's that time to stock up for the celebrations that matter with ingredients that help make memories. Visit Calgary Co-op, where life's in store. So it is May 3rd, 2024. Do you remember where you were 20 years ago today? Do you remember where you were on May 3rd of 2004? And even if that date doesn't mean anything immediately off the hop, if you're a Flames fan, then chances are you remember exactly where you were 20 years ago today on May 3rd, 2004. Because I'll set the scene for you. The Flames had a 3-2 series lead on the Detroit Red Wings in a best-of-seven second-round Western Conference series. They were locked in a 0-0 tie. That 0-0 game did not get decided in regulation. It went to overtime, and it looked like that 0-0 tie wasn't going to be decided in the first overtime period as well until we entered the final minute of overtime number one at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome.
The puck's in the left corner in the Red Wing zone. The Flames have it. Conroy goes behind the net. He's wrapped up by Lang. The puck in the left corner for Aguinla. Aguinla to the left circle. Aguinla shot. Joseph save. Rebound. He scores! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Martin Gilliland scores! The Flames win it! 1-0! Yeah, baby!
What a night at the Dome. What a call from the Hall of Famer. And just an incredible, incredible evening if you were a Flames fan. Getting past round one was one thing, and beating your arch rival, the Vancouver Canucks. But getting past the powerhouse Detroit Red Wings, yep, with the likes of Steve Yzerman, Brendan Shanahan, Brett Hull, these two young punks, Pavel Datsyuk and Henrik Zetterberg, Curtis Joseph in net, Darian Hatcher, Chris Chelios, Matthew Schneider on the back end. This team was built to do one thing and one thing only, and that was to raise Stanley Cups. And they ran into Mika Kiprusoff, the Eliminator Marty Jelena, Jerome Aguinla, Robin Regier, Craig Conroy, and the Calgary Flames in round two, and they could only win two games. And game six was 20 years ago today. I remember exactly where I was. I was watching the game in my close friend's basement. That's where we watched a lot of that 2004 run. You happen to remember where you were 20 years ago for that Jelena overtime winner?
I can take a pretty good guess, and that would have been Melrose, by way of the fact that I lived with a buddy at the time. He owned a place on 6th. Actually, technically, it would have been 15th Ave, but there's no 16th between 6th and 7th.
Yes.
So we were literally half a parking lot away from the front door at Melrose. So I do remember a little bit of shenanigans going on in that sense. Yeah.
Amazing. Get your text line. Get your text in, rather. at 960-960. And would love to hear from you in terms of where you were 20 years ago when the Flames won that game against the Detroit Red Wings. And, you know, I bet you our next guest knows where he was. Inside Hockey, it's time to welcome in the Eliminator. Marty Zelina right now joins us Inside Hockey. And, Marty, in Flames development now, and we'll get to what you're doing with the Wranglers in just a second. But do you happen to remember where you were at about 19:13 of overtime 20 years ago today?
I sure do. You know, it's amazing that there's moments in your career that is just you can't forget, and that one was so special. And then you know, I always say that the goal against Vancouver first round was special. The goal against Detroit was even more special. It's just because we were facing a team that was built to win, and we, you know, what before the series even started, you know, not a lot of people give us a chance to make it happen, and then to win that game six here at home, May 3rd, and thank you for reminding me that it's 20 years already because I. It's amazing how time flies, but yeah, that 20 years ago, we made as a team, and the city of Calgary was just everything was just so exciting around here. So and that goal, I always said it. The work was done by Iggy and my line mates, and it just happened to be at the right place at the right time. Big Darian Thatcher was right in front of the net. He was a massive defenseman. And the puck kind of, he just couldn't get his feet moving fast enough, just kind of trickled through his feet. And I saw the puck coming at me. I'm looking at the open net. I got to kind of put it in. And sure enough, we put it in. And just the reaction after, the excitement and the reaction from our bench, from our team, but not only that, from all the fans in the stands who couldn't believe that we made it happen, and we did, and we move on to the next round.
It's funny, Marty, you talk about the reaction. How many times have you heard Peter Marr's call of that goal? Like, isn't that just the most incredible example of how incredible a moment that was?
Yeah, you know what? It was, I mean, the everything. If you were there live, it was exciting because the building was buzzing. But if you were listening on the radio and then you heard Peter Marr, you know, yeah, baby, it's in. Like, that was exciting. Like, everything was just so exciting and unexpected and good for Peter. Like, it was genuine. Like, he was so excited about us moving on to the next round that he was on top, and just on top of his lungs, he's just yelling, "Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!"
Yeah, it was pretty special time in the city, and you know, it's funny. You talk about that Red Wings team. You'd gotten past Vancouver in round one, but I remember vividly being like, okay, well, that was awesome. You know, for a lot of people in this city, it was like, okay, well, they finally won a playoff round. They hadn't won a playoff round since 1989. It's like, this is really cool for a lot of us. It was the first time being around for a playoff series win. But then you're like, all right, well, you know, it's the Red Wings now, so you know, that's gonna be a tough task. You know, maybe if they can get it to five or six, that'll be and you did get it to six, but it felt like. And the famous story about Daryl Sutter in the locker room after game one and the overtime win over Detroit and throwing the newspaper in the garbage and all that type of stuff. How much did the belief build even more after you took that overtime win in game one?
It sure did. You know what? It kind of sets you up for the rest of the series because now they're on their heels a little bit, and we're thinking, hey, we're facing a good team, but we're a hardworking team. We can beat anyone if we all buy in and focus on the tasks that we have to do. And then, you know what? We won it. We believe. And then to a T, every guy on that team played the way he was capable of playing. Jerome Iguodala was it was our skill and power forward and could score goals. And you had Donovan and could fly. Like, everybody just embraced their role. And this is that first game, no question about it, made us believe that we could win, knowing that there's no guarantee because you're facing, you know, you get a member to that team of the Red Wings at that time. There's no, I don't think it was the cap era, right?
No.
You could just spend whatever. Yeah. So you, I mean, you had Datsy, Shanahan and Brett Hall and who else is, Zetterberg was on that team on the back end, Olmstrom,
Chelios.
That was on. Yeah. And then Hatcher, Lindstrom. Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and so when you go, you're the underdog facing a team like that, you're kind of thinking, what are our chances? So you're right, Pat. That first overtime win kind of gave us a little bit of a spark on that we could make it happen.
Kipper was unbelievable the entire playoff run, right up to Game 7 of the Cup Final. But was it that Red Wings series where Mika was kind of that was when it was like, holy, this guy is stealing games. I mean, the Game 6 was a 38-save shutout to win the series. Was the Detroit series kind of the peak of Mika Kiprusoff in that playoff run?
I think it was like you know, the first round he was really good, and you need him to be good for us to advance against Vancouver. But that second round, I mean, you look at, I mean, the team we're facing and the scores, like, he didn't allow many goals, you know what I mean? And that was the difference. When you're winning 2-1 and 1-0 and 1-0, like you need your goalie to stand on his head, and he did that whole series, so.
So we're chatting with Marty Jelena, joining us here on Flames Talk. 20th anniversary on this May 3rd of Marty's Game 6 overtime winning goal against the Detroit Red Wings in that 2004 run. And you know, Marty, you're into the final minute of overtime. The goal gets scored at 19:13 of overtime, and you see that puck coming towards you. What's going through your head at that point? Like, are you thinking, I can't miss? Are you already thinking and visualizing the puck going in? Like, what is going through your head as in slow motion you see that puck coming at you?
I didn't think I cannot miss, but I said, I gotta get this. We I gotta put it in. And it was not a flat coming flat. It was kind of bouncing a little bit. And sure enough, it just took a big swing at it and went in. And that was the end of it. That was the end of Detroit. But you know what? I always say that, like, that puck came so slow. Anyone could have scored those goals. But you do feel the pressure of, okay, that puck is bouncing, it's coming at me, there's an open net, gotta make this happen, and sure enough, it did happen.
So what's the first feeling that goes through you when you see it go in? You don't miss it, you score it, you know that the series and the game is over. Like, what's the instant reaction in your mind?
Just the excitement. I remember the first guy I was hugging was Higgy. That was right there. I think there's a picture I still have somewhere in the basement about just grabbing him, being so happy. And he was my first because he's the one, I think, threw the puck in front of the net. And then you see the rest. You look at the excitement of the rest of your teammates just jumping on the ice. And you take a quick peek in the stands, and you see the crowds going crazy. And this is what a playoff is all about. It's about making memories and making things special and winning and having your city embracing that playoff run. And it was magical, Pat.
Marty, the next game you played was Game 1 in San Jose, and you had like a week break between Game 6 and Game 1, but it felt like the group just kept on rolling, hey? Like the first game in San Jose was Steve Montador's overtime winner. It felt like as you picked up steam, like you were able to carry it over into the next series.
Oh, we should have. You know what happened, too, is I think you're talking about Kipper being really the X factor in that series, and he was. But that series gave us confidence. If we can beat Detroit, we can beat anyone. And we had a week to get prepared, and you know how Darryl is. He's going to make sure everybody's staying sharp and focused and so on. And we did that. We practiced with pace. Guys that were banged up, just give them a chance to kind of recoup and get back to par. And then hitting the ground running against San Jose, I think we felt where Detroit, where Vancouver, like we thought, oh, it's kind of we'll work and we're gonna do our best. But we just don't know where against San Jose. I think we just felt we could beat up.
Marty, when you look back on that entire playoff run and the legend that became the Eliminator, how do you look back on? I guess, first of all, you had an unbelievable playoffs, but the fortune and the ability to score three and we'll say four series winning goals. How, like, when you look back at that, how many things have to come together for you to be in the right place in the right time that many times and you know, to score two series winning overtime winners like that? Most NHLers don't get the opportunity to do that.
You know what? I'm grateful and thankful that it happened, and I was thankful to play with the right people too. Because different roles, you're maybe not getting those opportunities. So, which I did, and I'm grateful for Darryl giving me that chance. But I look back, Patty, and I tell most people, I said, all those goals, you could have scored them. They were a couple of inches away from the goal line. But the reality is I was lucky in your bang on, be at the right place at the right time, battling for space, battling for the opportunity to kind of to do that. And it's funny how timing is. You're going to be in that same position, and you're going to be driving the net the same way 1,000 times. But those two times, it's going to, that puck's going to come to you and you're going to score. So it just kind of happened, right place, right time, playing with the right people and creating memories for our city.
When you look back at that run for yourself, I mean, you take a look at that roster, whether it was, you know, Jerome was the captain and Craig Conroy had been on deep playoff runs before. And, you know, Sean Donovan was there and Stefan Jell had won a Stanley Cup. Like, there were good leaders inside that room, Dave Lowry. But, you know, you had been to cup finals before with Vancouver and Edmonton. You had won a Stanley Cup before. How much of a leadership role did you take on as that run was going on?
You know, quite a bit, because you realize as you get older and years kind of passes by that opportunities like this don't happen very often. And as you get older, you want to make sure that you help your team taking that step and so on. And I think Darryl was the best at making me realize that. And it was early, I think I always said that against Vancouver after game three, where you said, you took me in his office and said, if I had another left winger, you'd probably be in the stands right now. And then I went home so upset and so unhappy about what he said, and thinking what really he was saying is, as an older guy, you got to step up. And from that point on, you know, I wanted to show Darryl that I could do it. And as an older guy, you gotta take leadership and steps and. There's some guys that are vocal. We had Dave Lowry that could do it on the ice and in the dressing room. For me, I did it more in on the ice. Mm-hmm. But you gotta take that step for sure. And everybody was embracing their role. We had a blue collar team that just kind of were willing to do whatever it took for their teammates.
Last one on the on 2004 and last one on that conversation, and then we'll wrap up with kind of what you're doing now in a big game on Friday night at the Scotiabank Saddledome. But, you know, Craig's the general manager of the team. You're in player development. Jerome's in management. There's still so many guys, Regeer and Rhett, and so many guys are still in this city. It was one of those runs where you're kind of bonded for life, isn't it?
I think it does. You know, and it's unfortunate that we came out short. You know, so many people still come to this day and say that goal was in, and maybe technology was different because it did change after lockout, where the camera angles were right above the crossbar after. It was a special run for a lot of us. This is why we're still living in the city. We're still working for the Flames or doing different things in this city and loving and embracing. Came out short. I look at the 89 team, Patty, and they're still a tight, tight group.
Yeah.
So anytime you go far and win in battle together, and it creates memories it brings everybody together. It was a special, special time for our 2004 team.
Just a few more with Flames legend and Flames development. Marty Jelena with us here on Flames Talk. You're a busy guy still. You've got a lot of bodies around right now with the Wranglers. You're working with a lot of players, getting set for games, and like it's a busy time for you. Tell us what's going on right now for you.
Well, it's a great time. Our Wranglers are doing well past the first round, which is a little scary. It was the best of three and against Tucson. Moved on, won two games there, came back. And now we're facing Coachella on the second round. So what's happening is a lot of our junior draft players are now around the Wranglers. And some of them will go back. Some of them will be staying with the Wranglers next year. But it gives us a chance to work with them, really show them what it takes and what will need to happen during the summer for them to take that next step. Gives them a chance to be against the Wranglers. They're pro players and be part of the meetings and learning and seeing what it takes. And some of them have an opportunity to be with the main team. This morning I was skating some five guys this morning, and it was all about skill and games in tight area. And we had Parker Bell and Lucas Siona. We had Sam Onzik as our first round pick last year. So gives them a chance to be around, to learn, to get a feel for what the next step is. And it gives us a chance to work with them and have our hands trying to help them. And it's amazing for those kids who are young players coming from junior that, you know, were their stars. And that thing didn't come easy. They had to work for it. But they get to this level and realize, oh, boy, this is a hard, hard step. This is a big step. And this is why it's so good for them to be around.
And a last question for you. You've been in player development for a number of years now, and this year at the NHL level, whether it was Marty Pospisil or Connor Zeri or Matt Coronato or even Solovyov and Klapka and some guys who got opportunities at the NHL level throughout the year, How gratifying was that for you, Marty, to see a lot of these guys get their first opportunities in the NHL and make those big steps?
You know what? It's so good and refreshing to see it. And partly, too, is they got the chance where you know what? In the past, it's just kind of we go with the older guys because it's just kind of stability and you know what you're going to get. Sometimes it takes a little bit of courage to give a young guy a chance game after game. And we did that. I give credit to Craig Conroy and Ryan Aska to be on the same page to get that done. But to those players, I give a lot of credit. It's a big step. Like we talked about the big step between junior and the American Hockey League. It's that step to the NHL is like it's to perfection. Like passes are sharp and plays are crisp and shots are they're humming, they're coming. So I give that a lot of credit to Connor Zary and Pospisil and even Matthew Coronado's chance to kind of get a feel for what the next step is. And now we have him with the Wranglers for the playoffs. It's his chance to kind of keep pushing and showing the management what he's capable of doing. And then next year come back and be a full-time NHLer. It's been phenomenal. Even Solo on defense. Kuzi had a chance. Adam Klapka had a chance. So this is why I'm happy. As on the development side, we're happy to see our young prospect getting a chance to show what they're capable of doing.
Marty, awesome stuff catching up with you. It's always great to chat with you. It's always great to catch up, but especially on a cool anniversary like this one today. Thanks so much for the time, hey, and good luck to the Wranglers starting in game one on Friday night.
Thanks, Patty. Thanks for having me.
It's Marty Zielina, the Eliminator, 20 years after Eliminator Goal 2. 20 years to the day, May 3rd, 2024, May 3rd, 2004, at a certain moment of overtime. 19:13 of overtime, less than a minute to go. Marty Zielina scores the overtime winner. Flames oust the powerhouse Red Wings 4-2. Went on to play the San Jose Sharks 6 days later in the Western Conference Final, a series they would also win in 6 games, and carried that momentum, as you heard Marty talk about, into that series. They won game 1 and 2 in San Jose. What a time that was in the city. And you would have been just new in the city, hey?
Arrived September 2023. So what's funny about that entire run for me is I moved from Grand Prairie. Very much Edmonton Oilers country.
Yeah.
So when I moved to Calgary, in that September 2023, every single one of my buddies was like, oh, you're a Flames fan now. You're a Flames fan now. And just rammed Flames down my throat. Then they go to the Cup final and suddenly they're a little quiet. Worked out okay.
I asked you before we brought Marty on. Thanks again to Marty Zielina. Thanks to Jay Bay and the Flames PR crew for making that happen today as well. But just before we brought Marty on, asked you, where were you 20 years ago at 960? Lots of response. This reads, even if you're a Flames fan, how can you not smile listening to Peter Marr's call of that series clinching goal? So awesome. This reads, wow, just chills. I remember listening to that call on my radio in my room when I was 11 years old. I used to mute my 9-inch Panasonic TV to listen to Peter's call. This from Corey in Met Hat says, I was at the Met for that goal. Ooh, that would have been a good spot for the Met in 2004. That would have been outstanding. This says, I was at the Dome, recall jumping out of my seat so high and yelling, could not even hear myself, loudest ever. This says from Gabe at work, I was working nights at the subway on 7th Ave and 8th Street. Man, did I see some stuff. Yeah, that subway isn't even open anymore. The one that was used to be on top of a colloquially called Max that used to be there. It's now a Circle K. It has a term that Calgarians call it that I'm not going to call it right now just because I won't, but we all know what I'm talking about. But it was 100%. It was on the second floor right beside the McDonald's, not even open anymore. Oh, you were working there in 2004. You would have.
He saw some stuff.
I live 2.5 blocks south and a little west as well. And when I walk home from work after Flames games, I see some stuff as well. This says, I was at Shank South rocking my green hard hat. Walked up and down McLeod from Southland to Heritage, waving a flag while cars honked. That's awesome. This reads, I remember driving home that night after working the game when Conroy called the station, said he was driving down Deerfoot and his excitement made him call in, brought tears to my eyes, and confirmed him as my favorite player of all time. Bob says he was at Nottingham's Pub in the Northwest. Rob in Mackenzie Lake says, I was chilling at the Dome with Jerome. What a great atmosphere. Been in many barns for big playoff games, but nothing matches the Dome during the 04 run or the Red Mile. This says, I was at Peter Laheed having my hand crushed while my wife was in labor with our daughter. That's awesome. This reads, from Cam and Shaughnessy, I was there screaming my head off. One of the loudest things I ever heard. This says, I remember the guys at CJ, I think it was Forbes, getting people to go down to the hotel where the Red Wings were and started honking in the early morning on a game day when Detroit was in town. I do remember that. I do believe that was a Forbes and Friends special. Absolutely. And then this says from Jim, don't forget about the trucks and horns outside the hotel. That was Forbes having one of the greatest morning shows in Canadian radio history. That absolutely is right in line. This from Jim, another Jim. I was in press level 10. That was the loudest I've ever heard the dome, and people were jumping up and down and hugging everyone in sight. My favorite memory as a Flames fan, the Eliminator struck again. This from Jeff. I was sitting in my season ticket seats, section 312, row 3, seats 9 and 10. Was awesome. This says, I was at the dome, one of the best games ever. Can't believe it was 20 years ago. And this says, I was meeting my future ex-wife at the Red Mile.
Not sure if that is literal or figurative, but doesn't matter. The point stands, and I feel like a lot of people met their ex-wife there.
Or ex-husband. Or ex-husband. Whatever the case may be. Great stuff on the text line at 960-960. Awesome stuff with Marty Shelena reminiscing, and always good to hear that call from Peter Marr as well. That's our look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Flames fans, meet Cal and Gary. Top products curated for Calgarians, and we mean every single one of you. Only available at Calgary Co-op. Visit them today.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
This hour rolls on. Steinberg and Vickers on a Wednesday, on a Friday. I almost called that Wednesday. Steinberg and Vickers on a Friday. How about the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Oh,
dead and buried by earlier me. This week by everyone. And hello, Game 7. 2-1 overtime win. Tuesday night in Game 5, they go back home where they had yet to win a game, and Wee Willie Nylander with 2 goals, the gorgeous game winner to put it away on the great pass from Matthew Nyes. And all of a sudden, the Maple Leafs are in a spot where they can win a series on Saturday night. 6 o'clock faceoff from TD Garden in Boston. Game 7, Bruins and Maple Leafs. First Game 7 of the 2024 postseason. We will have that game for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan starting at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. But boy, do you give them... I know that when we had the conversations going into Game 5, you know, you were like, nah, Leafs are done. Nashville's got life. I was like, no. Preds are done, but the Leafs still have life. Something about them losing Austin Matthews, as difficult as that is, that's their 69-goal guy. Nice. And all of a sudden, your most dangerous, most impactful player isn't playing. It kind of forces, sometimes, especially in a situation like this where you're already fighting for your life, it kind of forces teams to rally, and I kind of wonder, and we'll never know, but I want, if Austin doesn't get hurt and Matthews is playing in Game 5, do they even win that game? I don't know. I really wonder what losing Matthews did for the Maple Leafs to kind of get them to a new level in terms of their desperation and to rally around things. Because remember, it was Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander bickering like 90210 characters after the Game 4 loss. And then all of a sudden, Austin isn't able to go. Nylander has been outstanding the last two games. Marner's played his best two games of the series in Game 5 and 6. And all of a sudden, you know, they've got all the momentum going into Game 7. And Game 7 is fascinating because the Maple Leafs have a long, storied history, especially against Boston, of flaming out in just incredible, dramatic fashion in Game 7s. But I am actually more fascinated about the Boston Bruins all of a sudden, because for a second straight year, they had themselves a 3-1 series lead with an opportunity to close out on home ice, and they messed it up. And in this case, they messed it up in just, like, they were so bad to start Game 5. They were even worse to start Game 6 and were lucky it was still scoreless. And they all of a sudden are in a spot where they're gripping it again after losing in overtime in Game 7 to Florida last year. I am
fascinated what that mindset, what that psyche is like from Boston going into Game 7 on Saturday night.
Funny you bring up last year, Patrick, because I fired you off a text, and we've been exchanging things we've been seeing on Twitter in regards to this series, and there was a graphic made at Sportsnet heading into last game. Bruins were 0-5 in their last five opportunities to advance in the playoffs, and the Leafs were 0-6 in their past six home playoff games. So that's movable force, stoppable object, absolutely, I don't even know if they would collide, they're just fizzling. But credit to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I wrote them off in game five, they won. I wrote them off in game six, they won. Now they're 1-6 in their past seven home games. But the Boston Bruins just cannot find a way to eliminate an opponent when they've had the ability to just sort of squash any life out of them. Up 3-1 against Florida, as you mentioned, lose three straight. Up 3-1 against the Toronto Maple Leafs, have lost consecutive games. And now for me, instead of this being a pressure cooker for the Toronto Maple Leafs, this is the Boston Bruins absolutely sweating it in my books because here we go again.
Yeah, like if you ask me, all the pressure's on them.
Yep. Now, that might feel a little differently inside Toronto's locker room, but from Calgary in the 960 downtown studio, I'm looking at the Boston Bruins going, oh, here you go again. Not so much the Toronto Maple Leafs. Oh, it's another Toronto Game 7. No, I'm not even really all that concerned with the pressure facing the Maple Leafs because I think it is just so much, the pendulum has swung so far in the other direction that this is a Boston Bruins potential choke job that could have pretty significant ramifications on that organization, I do believe.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about it. Now, if Toronto wins, it sets a, we get a rematch regardless. It's either Toronto winning and trying to avenge them getting pumped in round two against Florida last year, or it's Boston winning, trying to avenge the seven-game loss that they had to the Panthers last year. So we've got a, regardless of what happens, we've got a rematch in game two, or rather round two. I'm just curious as to which one it ends up being. Doesn't sound like the feel is skeptical that Austin Matthews will be able to play in game seven, so we'll see.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And to your point earlier, the return of William Nylander, Calgary's own William Nylander-ish, has really, in my opinion, jump-started the Toronto Maple Leafs. And yeah, maybe his first game wasn't quite there, but he's coming back off an injury as well, trying to find his legs and getting going. The last two games, for me, he's been one of, if not the best player on the ice.
So we already have one game seven. Now we find out Friday night if Nashville and Vegas can do the same thing. Vegas returns home with a 3-2 series deficit against Dallas, looking for their first home win of the series. And Nashville returns home looking for their first home win with a 3-2 series deficit on Vancouver. And I'm, again, very curious how this all plays out. Do you do we get any other game sevens? Do we get some game seven action on Sunday? At least the way your gut's feeling.
Yes, 100%.
Two?
I'm less bullish on two.
Okay.
But I still believe in the Nashville Predators. I've liked how they played throughout the series, regardless of result. And I think that's the one that'll be pushed to game seven. I don't want to say for sure because nothing's certain when it comes to the Stanley Cup playoffs, but I like Nashville's ability or chances to push it to game seven against the Vancouver Canucks more than I like Vegas's opportunity against Dallas. Now, having said that, I also don't necessarily, I picked Dallas out of the West.
So did I.
I picked Florida out of the East. I picked Dallas out of the West. I still don't know if I like the thought or the odds of Dallas being able to win four straight against the defending Stanley Cup champion. But I just feel that much better about Nashville's odds against against the Canucks, pardon me, than I do Vegas being able to push this one to a game seven against Dallas.
What I really like is that if either of the games Friday go to game seven, they'll both be played on Sunday. And for the this has got to be the first time ever that the NHL has gone the NBA route, where they have a potential series starting at the same time as a series ending, or if it's not the first time ever, it's rare that the NHL does this. I mean, They did do once regular season games being played at the Scotiabank Saddledome, followed by playoff games that night. But, you know, we like to pretend that that never existed. But it would be Carolina, New York starting off round two. It will be, regardless, Carolina, New York starting off game round two on Sunday afternoon with a 2 o'clock start Calgary time. And then if there's a game seven, they would be played after the Hurricanes and Rangers. We might have an awesome Sunday of hockey on our hands. I'm kind of hoping we get at least one game seven Sunday night.
Why just one? Let's go for the whole thing.
Well,
minimum one.
Give me both.
But
give me both.
There, as you mentioned, there are no two better words in the English language. Game seven.
And one more flame to the World Championship. Andrew Mangiapane will represent Canada for the second time. The first time, you didn't cover that one, right?
No, that was quasi still COVID related. Yeah, that was a situation.
That was 2022 or 2021.
I think it was 2021.
Yeah, yeah, it was after the weird bubble season.
Yeah, so I ended up missing.
It wouldn't have been 2022 because they went to the second round that year. So yeah, it was 2021 where Mangiapane scored the gold medal winning goal for Team Canada
on a feed from Stecher was the semifinal, I believe, on that feed. Was he not, or is that the gold medal game?
I don't remember.
There was a ridiculous play between he and Stecher. Regardless,
wasn't it him and Connor Brown too, or something like that? I don't remember. Anyway,
he scored a lot of goals, but remember when he got over there, he was sort of a quasi late addition. He had to quarantine before he played. Canada had lost every game in the tournament up until Mangiapane made his debut. Then they ran the table.
Yeah. And he was a huge reason why.
Oh, he's the MVP.
So Mange going back to the World Championship. He'll represent Canada. He's the only Flame going for Canada. We already knew that Martin Pospisil was going for to go for Slovakia. So Pospisil and Mangiapane are your two Flames representing their countries at the World Championship. So now you've got a second Calgary player to be able to cover when you're there in Prague and Ostrava.
Well, now I can finally live up to the Flames Talk international correspondent title that you keep granting me for no apparent reason.
World Championship correspondent. I like it.
I like it.
Also on Sunday, Wranglers and Coachella Valley for game two of their series. We'll see what happens on Friday night for game one. But boy, we could just be having nonstop hockey. Depending on how things go, we 100% have Coachella Valley Calgary from the Dome on Sunday afternoon. But will we have some game seven action on Sunday? We'll find out depending on what happens on Friday. Good to see Andrew Mangiapane representing Canada at the World Championship as well. As we start to wrap up this hour on Flames Talk, thanks to Sham, thanks to Cam, our producers this hour. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Enjoy the worlds, buddy. We'll talk to you when you're back.
Absolutely.
That'll wrap us up this hour. This hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Book a free security audit and keep your assets as safe as your secret snack drawer. Book at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.